Hi guys, this is Thorir from the Phallological Museum in Reykjavik. Please see, come and see us if you're ever in Iceland. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. Welcome on back, folks. Hello. How are you, Mike? Welcome back to, I don't know, I think we're 372 as we climb our way to 400 here. And that episode 400 we have planned is epic.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been missing the last few meetings about episode 400. Can you send me over the notes so I can get ready?
You're going to have to reach out to Elaine in... Human resources.
She never returns my emails, though.
You know that we can't have direct contact with one another. It's in the contract that we only talk to each other for the hour and a half per week, and anything outside of that has to go through our people. So
every time I email our people, they keep on replying, "We don't exist. Stop trying to email us."
Yes, that may or may not be me, but it is what it is. But hello, everybody. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show. If this is your this is your first time, that's Mike. I'm Scott. We're coming off a couple cool episodes, so if you're just tuning in and you like what you hear, go back a few. We had Dee Snider on the show just about 2 weeks ago. So, and today you'll get you'll get the other side of us. Like we, the goal of the show is always, we get some big names here and there, but we love sprinkling in the kind of unique and interesting along the way.
Yeah, we like to throw in every once in a while the WTFs of the world.
Yep. Mike, my comedy streak is well alive, if you will.
You got a little Lou Gehrig going there?
Yeah, I got a streak. About 2 weeks ago, I told you about a couple duds. I had two more duds. One with some stories, the other one just kind of a dud, like, of a show. So this past week, actually, before we start, Mike, happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. And
it is 5 years since the first Verbal Shenanigans comedy show. Yeah. That's what we're celebrating here.
You remembered and all, and I got the beautiful flowers and, you know, the harps that, the harpist that you hired that, woke me up in the morning, and all. It was so touching, so touching.
So how are you celebrating your wedding anniversary? I think it's number three for you?
Number three, yeah. We missed you, Dale. We are...
Did you just salute Dale Earnhardt for your wedding anniversary?
Well, I mean, the two biggest loves of my life, my wife and NASCAR, come on.
Okay.
So...
Were you like, hey, baby, Happy Dale and Earnhardt anniversary.
Yeah. We did some burnouts. we put on black outfits, put on dark sunglasses. I was rocking a mustache for the day.
You crashed.
I went head first into the wall. mine turned out a little better than the other guy, I digress.
It's a beautiful way to celebrate. It's number three for you, huh? So how are you celebrating? What Disney park are you going to?
We are not going to a Disney park this time.
Yes!
We are going up to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, the Rocky Mountains. We're going to be spending a weekend up there. We'll be doing a day in Knoxville, playing around there. We'll be going to Dollywood on Sunday. We have there's a pirate themed restaurant in Pigeon Forge.
Is it Arby's?
I see what you did there.
Oh God,
I see what you did
I'm
there,
so
Scott.
Quick.
I know that's why you got the streak going.
That's why the streak is going. Yep.
But we'll be staying at her favorite hotel down there, as you recall, the Christmas one.
Ah, the other
Christmas
thing. Yep.
Yep. Christmas all year, so it's just nice and all. I mean, I've been in a little rut, just getting through the days has been a lot of work lately, and it's been a while since any kind of free time or vacation. So I'm pleased to get out.
Is it refreshing to go, like, to be like, oh my God, we're not going to see Mickey or Minnie or no Goofy. No one's going to appear this next couple of days. Like, to go somewhere else.
I want to get excited, but knowing my wife, there might be a surprise somewhere.
You're going to be like, how are we at the Disney Resort in Knoxville, Tennessee? Like, no one's ever heard of this.
Yeah. When did this get built? When did they buy it? What, you bought the land? Is that why we couldn't pay the mortgage last month?
Well, happy anniversary to you, Mike.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah. So the other night we had our it is actually true, though. The little flyer popped up the other day in my Facebook memories. 5 years since the first show at Tap House, which is kind of hard to believe. I know we lost basically a year and a year and a quarter due to this little pandemic thing that happened, you know.
What was that about?
I don't know if you heard of it. It was kind of big news. If you read, it was like the third or fourth story on the, you know.
It was around the time I couldn't find toilet paper. Yeah, that was my big thing. I was running around screaming and my butt's dirty. Somebody help.
Right. So I had a show at Tap House. Now, I host a lot of them. Usually I will now switch it up nowadays. My good friend Bobby Gaines comes. He was supposed to host, and he's like, oh, I'm hosting? Oh, no. Like, I'm like, oh, you bum. I'm like, I'll just host, because I always kind of take the bullet, like, a lot of times. They don't want to host. He had a ride taking him somewhere. So I went from, like, in the mode to try, like, a whole bunch of new stuff to, okay, I got to turn on, like, the happy hosting mode, if you will, you know. Anybody celebrate anything? Blah, 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 blah.
Kind of like the Wink Martindale kind of thing where you got the mic. Hey, everyone, welcome. How's it going?
Exactly.
Oh, you're so beautiful. You're so beautiful. So what's going on, everybody?
Exactly. Everyone knows that if you're hosting, you got to do a little bit of the crowd warm-up, the how we feeling tonight, anybody celebrating anything, those kind of hacky crowd warm-up things that have worked for decade after decade warming up a crowd. So kind of got to do what you got to do. So I go up, and So I go up. It's just not a good set. Crowd is very, very tight. They're like smilers, not laughers, which is always even more awkward sometimes when you're just like, you're like, are you guys digging this at all, or you just don't laugh? Like, it's hard to tell. So my set doesn't go great.
Okay.
Now, so that was one weird part. I mean, one part of the show, which adds to the streak. But the streak lately has been awkward shows and weird things happening to me. So prior to the show, so you've actually seen this, Mike, in our Verbal Shenanigans page, but I get a message from a woman a couple weeks ago saying, hey, I work, are you taking any comedians? And I say, oh, just send me a video, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, I do comedy and I work at a zoo. And I'm like, oh. Mm. And then, like, jokingly, because I'm not really kind of taking this message serious, I'm like, do you have bears at the zoo? And she's like, yeah, we got a bunch of bears. And I'm like, oh, can I feed one? And she's like, yeah, maybe. I'm like, all right, well, I got to play a game with this woman a little bit. So she's like, yeah, I do comedy. I'm a zookeeper. She must have mentioned that like four times. And I'm like, just send me a video. She's like, oh, I only have it on a flash drive. I'm like, okay, can you just upload what's on that flash drive?
Yeah.
And just email it over, you know?
The thing about the internet is you can actually still do something.
Yeah.
There are steps that can be done in these scenarios.
Yeah. So she messages me closer to the show and is like, oh, there's a waiting list, so maybe I'll see you on Thursday. I'm like, no, so they don't have tickets. So I walk into the show to set up, and Tina at Tap House, who helps out, is like, oh, there's a woman looking for you. She's in a flowery shirt. I'm like, oh, God. Like, I'm kind of like, as far as a promoter goes, I'm probably the most antisocial promoter. As a comic, I'll talk to anybody, but promoter, I don't want to be like, I want to be. Remember, we were talking about that anonymous band the other day. I want to be an anonymous promoter. Like, I just want them to be like, because she was like asking, like, oh, is Scott here? And Tina does a good job of deflecting. She's like, oh, I don't know. I don't think, I'm not even sure who sets it up. I want to be like, yeah, we don't know how this show got here. Like, the owner works with the guy. He doesn't even know his name. It just appears. Yeah,
Scott is like an acronym for the comedy company. There's not a real person.
Comedian operation tactics team. That is what Scott stands for.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, that's all the best algorithms make comedies in bars nowadays. I found that out.
So, after the show goes good eventually, like it goes good. And after the show, she comes and finds me and hands me this thumb drive, Mike. With a picture of her holding a giant bird. I don't know if you could see that.
Oh, I see it.
And she gives me her number on the back and says, or Zoo Mama email. So, Zoo Mama email, and actually hands me a physical flash drive with her information on it. So I have not watched it yet. I will definitely.
Does she bring the bird up on stage? Like, is her bit, like, literally just bringing up animals and just like, oh, look at this ugly hyena,
like a Jack Hanna kind
of
thing.
Once, let's laugh at him, right? Am I right? this bombed and all. You killed the audience. I don't want them to remember me.
Yeah, like I'm thinking that most of her material is going to be zoo related, considering she's going by Zoo Mama and gives me a picture of a bird. But you know,
hello, my name is Zoo Mama. I have nothing but airline food jokes for you tonight.
So that's weird. Then during the show, one of my spotlights burns out. Like, I look over and it's out, meaning that I probably have to get a new bulb, and they're not cheap. So that was annoying. I had to, like, fix spotlight. So then end of the show comes, and usually I have the comics kind of stand, and they just kind of naturally stand at the end of the show, kind of towards the exit, and, you know, say your goodnights and thanks for comings and stuff like that, and people come out, great show, blah, blah, blah. And this woman walks up to me. She's got a smile on her face. She's limping. She's like, great show. And she's like limping towards me. And I'm like, oh, no, what happened? I'm like, thanks for coming. I'm like, oh, no, what happened? And she goes, what do you mean what happened? And I look down quickly and I realize she's got no leg. She's just got like an artificial peg, like a pole kind of leg. And I'm like,
okay.
It was like I thought you were someone else. I was I just completely gave probably no real answer whatsoever, and she just like looked at me like, oh, okay. So I don't know if she knows that I looked down at her missing leg or that I was definitely trying to cover it up quickly.
Well, I mean, she might have had a clue when you. Your eyes went down for a second. You screamed, holy crap, what the hell? what on God's green earth happened here?
So that was really awkward and embarrassing.
Yeah. So what you do is you're like, no, I, there's a stain on your shirt. And she's like, where? And if she can't find it, you just like throw some marinara on her. And you're like, oh, I'm one of them prop comedians.
So your solution to that is for me to marinate one of the audience members and just,
yes. If you embarrass yourself with anybody that has a handicap, I think the best solution is to throw food at them.
Now I know you've been out of the comedy game for a while, but things have changed, Mike. You can't what? Marinate the audience anymore. I know that was your move.
Yeah, man, that was like my opener.
You used to have EVOO like in your pocket and just like, bam, if you're not laughing, I'm going to marinate you.
Yeah, remember that night I sprayed hot sauce in the guy's eyes? We were all laughing at him the entire time. I didn't even have a set. No. I was so scared.
The audience loved it, though.
Yeah, I just freaking basically maced him with Tabasco sauce, and we all just pointed and laughed for like 19 minutes.
Weren't you touring under Mike the Marinator for a little while?
I mean,
you were trying
for a little bit, like trying. on other parts of the East Coast. I was trying out like a stage name, but you know, I mean, after I blinded a couple people and the cops were trying to find me, I had to go back to Michael Berlew.
Yeah, and that time that you opened for Gallagher, he wasn't really appreciative of, like, your...
Oh, yeah.
It was like, a little stepping on his toes a little bit.
Yeah, he literally chased me around the stage with that huge mallet for, like, 20 minutes. Yeah, yeah. The like, I kept on screaming at the audience, this is not a bit, and they just kept on laughing. Yeah. I'm like, no, don't laugh at me. Laugh at the guy I sprayed with the hot sauce.
Yeah, the Sledge-O-Matic, right? Wasn't that the name of the
hammer? Yep. Yeah. He had that whole thing where his brother was touring as him.
Gallagher
and then
2.
Eventually had to sue his brother because he just won his act. That's got to be like an awkward kind of situation right there. Yeah.
Speaking of that, I'm going to get off topic for a minute, but I watched a documentary on... Bob Ross.
Okay.
And really interesting documentary, but like, you know, it goes through his whole backstory. And another, here's an example of another artist who basically got all his fortune gobbled up by like a business partner. And his son and his stepson literally have no percentage of the business. And he tried to leave it to him. And so, you know, I don't know if you've seen, like, Bob Ross stuff pops up all the time now. There's, like, games and shirts, and they use his likeness and, like, a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Paints. And so it's, like, a multi-million dollar industry still, and they get not a cent of it, by the way. So it was, it's pretty ridiculous. So it reminded me of, like, Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, like, literally had a psychiatrist that slowly took over the rights to his music and just drugged him for like 10, 15 years straight. And would just basically like make him perform things. And he was in like a drug induced like coma essentially, which is what that movie Love and Mercy is about. If anyone check, it's a really good movie. Not Nick Cage. Jesus Christ. God, John Cusack. I don't know how I got Nick Cage and John Cusack confused there, but
I would be entertained by just because Nick Cage has no money. Yep. We should hire him to just do John Cusack movies just to see what. I would like to see him with like the big boombox holding over his head.
Yeah.
Trying to serenade somebody.
Yeah. It's John Cusack, Paul Giamatti, and Paul Dano plays young Brian. Really good movie. So anyway, back to the comedy. So then this is the worst part of the night. I pack up, which... It's hard when you're like a one man band. You're the first one in, and then I do perform on every single one of these. And then it's kind of like saying goodbye to the comics. After a while, they always want to hang for a little while, and then it's like packing up. So I gotta like balance that all. So and it's a lot of stuff. I bring a stage, and I bring lights, and I bring speakers, and everything else under the sun.
The side note, as you were talking to the comedians, was Bobby Gaines still there? Where you're like, wait a minute, didn't you have a ride? He's like, yeah, I just didn't want.
No,
I just wanted to screw with you.
Bobby did live. Bobby did leave.
Oh, okay.
Still mad at you, Bobby. Anyway, so I'm driving home, and, you know, I'm driving equipment, everything home. I pull in the house, go to bed. Next morning, I got to get up early. I didn't unpack any stuff from the car. I just, you know, mm-hmm. just left it in the car, do it in the morning. And I'm backing out of my driveway, and all of a sudden I hear, do-do-do-do. I'm like, oh, no. And I just thought like stuff was shifting around, and I look in the back and my one speaker had fallen out of the truck, and I'm like, oh no. Like, so I have a pickup and I thought maybe it hit the latch and somehow it fell, cause everything in there was nicely stacked and the way it was. And then I'm like looking crazily. I'm like, oh my God, where's my other speaker? And I'm looking. I'm like, did I bring it inside last night? No. I call Tap House. Like, oh, I must have left it at the restaurant. And they're like, oh, we'll check when we get in. 2 hours go by. They're like, no, we're not seeing it at all here. And I'm like, oh, no. So I lost basically a $300 speaker out of the back of my car somehow the night before. And I even... I put on one of my town's like Facebook page. It was like, I know this is a long shot, but did anybody see? And I even redrove the route the next day to see if I saw it. Nothing. I'm like, did anybody see a speaker? And they're like, one person responds like, I saw a speaker this morning by the Burger King up the road. And I'm like, oh my God. So I went to the Burger King, and I was like, I'll go ask the manager. Maybe someone turned, you know, brought it in or put it in their dumpster or something. Like, and yeah. Of course, I get like Honey Boo Boo's mother, who was like the manager, but nah, we ain't seen no speaker here. Like, just very like abrasive and did not quite fit into the area. That's for sure.
Yeah, she has enough on her plate as is and all. I can't remember the last person who went to a Burger King. So she has enough. I mean, she was almost like, wait a minute, you want food here? This doesn't happen. We haven't. Burger King has been number 12 for the last 10 years.
It actually, like, amazes me how many people are at that Burger King. It's like lines. Like, I don't know. People just love fast food no matter what.
Oh, man. Down here, any chicken place, forget about it. Mm. Like, and, like, there'll be multiple, like, Popeyes and Chick-fil-A.
Oh, my God. Chick-fil-A.
Like, they'll all be within, like, a half-mile radius, and yet somehow both of them have, like, a double circle line where I'm like, I have no reason to go in there.
Yeah, like, what? I can never picture waiting, like, 45 minutes for, like, a chicken sandwich from a fast food joint. And then another person's like, people like on the Facebook thing responded like, I'll go check for you. I live right over there. And one person found the speaker cover to my speaker. And then another person responds like, oh, I saw someone in a white pickup truck picking that up this morning. And I'm like, oh, and I was like, maybe there is a chance that people are responding and seeing this thing. Then I even called the police, and I don't know if the police is who you would call like for this situation. Like, I don't know if there's like a, I don't know, recovery team or something, or
911. I'm gonna just throw it out there. This is an emergency for great comedy next month at Tap House 15. So yeah, listen to me.
Yeah. So and I called, and I didn't. It took me like 15 minutes to figure out which number from the menu at Town Hall I should, because it wasn't an emergency. But then it was like, for court appeals, press 2. For blah, 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 press 2. So I just called the dispatcher. I'm like, he's probably the guy that could get me to any of those places. And you could tell he had zero interest in what I was saying to him. I'm like, I know this is a long shot. I don't know if the police is even who I call. And explain the whole situation. And then he's just like, yeah, no one called about that. I'm like, oh, okay, thank you. We'll see you later. Like, he wanted nothing to do with my story.
First off, I hope the toll-free number that you dialed, like, for stuff that fell out of your truck, press 8, and you're like, oh, great. And then it's just a whole new list. And all. If a ball fell out of your truck, press 1. Damn it! What order is speakers in?
So, yeah, lost the speaker, got an order. I have to order another one this week probably, which blows. So basically, I worked for free that night and the next night. Go ahead.
I'm looking forward to the next Tap House because you're going to have the tallest comedian holding two flashlights since you have no spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have all your comedians on megaphones.
Right.
Kind of like the Mouth of the South Jimmy Hart. That'd be amazing. You know? Oh, my God, Hulk Hogan! But,
my buddy saw Jimmy Hart in a diner the other day.
You sent me that video. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was like a month ago. I don't know. Whatever. Time goes so. It might have been 3 months ago. I have no idea. But yeah, he was just in the diner just eating.
Yeah, it definitely looked like him. And I forget if he was wearing anything special. Like, if you wear like old school Jimmy Hart stuff, you can't get pissed off or like people come up to you and he's like, I'm just trying to eat. Yeah. What makes you think I'm going to talk about
Jimmy
Hart?
I don't think he went up for him. He's like, my friend is like a master at like, he'll like film things and film people in weird situations, and he's like real sneaky with his phone. Like, he always has videos like weirdos at the gym or like strange people he'll see on the beach. Like, he's a master at that.
Yeah, that kind of concerns me when you have that kind of quality. That makes me start questioning and all if he has a website with like upskirt shots or something like that.
Funny enough, he was going to go out for the FBI a long time ago and was actually enrolled or whatever and changed career path. But, yeah, maybe that's where he learned that skill.
Did he send it as part of his resume? No, seriously. Jimmy Hart never noticed me taping him. You need me.
Then I have another gig 2 nights later. it's nice because it's local, but I go there and it's a six people in the audience show again. And now I know no one gives a crap about the show because the guy running the show, who books the show, also had to waiter and serve people drinks and host at the same time. So
is that his place, or is that a side job and he gets to do comedy shows?
It's like an upstairs room in the restaurant, but he books like a lot of the shows and runs them. But usually there's a wait staff and a bartender. He was doing all of those. So he's bringing out chicken wings, meanwhile keeping the timer and lighting comics. And I felt so bad for him. I was like, oh, boy. Like, he literally goes up to host, like, hey, you guys, yeah, how you doing tonight? Yeah. And, you know, I'm if you need anything, I'm also taking drink orders and bringing out food. You guys ready for your first comic? It's like, oh, boy. Like, yeah, the tone was dead from the start.
Yeah. Our next comedian is coming up in a bit, but I have to valet park somebody's truck. I'm just trying to make ends meet. By the way, found a great speaker. I'm going to cheap price if anybody wants it.
Yeah.
Like, I found it on Route 10. It's amazing shape. Missing a cover, but it's cool.
Yeah. And then, like, I'm second in the lineup, and then the first comic goes up and bombs so hard that one of the girls that was on the show, her boyfriend was in the audience just texting her like, this is horrific. And he's like digging his heels in bombing, where he's talking about like deep cut, like wrestlers that, yeah, maybe other comics know, because for some reason every comic I know loves wrestling, but the audience is just staring at him and it's just no punchline, and he's like getting mad at the audience, and you could just hear, like, I'm in the back room, I'm like, oh god, and there's just six people in there staring at him, and you just feel the tension in the room, just like, we hate this guy. And he wasn't doing 5 minutes, he did like 20 minutes, and then I got to go up.
He was doing like 20 minutes on Repo Man.
Dude, it was bad. It was like, so one time I was watching this interview with Diamond Dallas Page and some other guy, and like everyone's like,
okay. The yoga guy? What? Is this going to be a yoga joke?
Interestingly enough, he had a DDP yoga shirt on. and I go up. I did perfectly fine. In fact, for the first time ever, which I've never done, I actually sat down on the stool because it was just such a low-key vibe that I just sat down on the stool and just kind of like tried to deliver jokes kind of softly and kind of more like just storytelling wise. And it went fine for what it was, but it was another like, Jesus Christ, can I just have one normal show where I go do my set, have fun, get paid and go home? Like, it just hasn't happened in a long time.
Well, there's an easy question I have to ask you, Scott.
Should I quit?
No. These two shows in question, were there walls involved?
There were walls.
Scott, I know you think you have a path, but I'm trying to steer you in the right direction.
I know.
What, you are the outdoor comedian.
Yep.
You need to be telling jokes by a lake.
Or by the
in a park,
by the shutdown venue, by the Coast Guard that I told you about the other week.
Yep. At the Coast Guard. Yep, that too. And all, if you can't tell what the weather is like by just putting your hand out 2 feet, you're in the wrong place, my friend.
So I should stay outdoor, like even as we get to winter, just still be doing this. Okay,
absolutely. You should be out there in 20 degree wind chill, just cracking wise on people.
So, I would tell you what my next show is, which is tomorrow night, and I'm sure we'll have something to discuss about this one next week, but before we get to our guest. So, I got a message on Instagram from a guy who's come to a bunch of comedy shows, and he's like, hey, my friend is looking for two comics or whatever to come and do clean for, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. It's a surprise birthday party for this guy. And I'm like, sure, whatever, what's the money? I negotiate a price and I book, me and Kevin Israel are gonna go do it. Funny comic.
the bulkiest comedian on the planet.
Yeah. And the woman's like, can you call me? I call her. And it's like, she's like, okay. So it's a birthday party for my son. He's turning 30. I'm like, okay. I'm like, does he like comedy? She's like, yeah, I think he likes comedy. I don't know. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, does the audience know there's going to be comedy there? Because I was like, surprise comedy really doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I've done it. It's terrible. She's like, yeah, a couple people. I'm like, well, you should tell people beforehand what they're in for. It's not like you're going to have someone playing music in the corner. You're going to ask everyone to shut up for 45 minutes or whatever it is. And then she starts going, well, it's for my son. He's a cancer survivor. He has one testicle. He went down to 115 pounds. And I'm sitting there like, okay. Like I said, God bless him. I'm glad he's okay. He's a firefighter. She's got to tell me he drives a Ram truck. He drives a Ram truck. That's what he loves to do. I'm like, okay. Like it just is a very odd. And she's telling me, we had the big room, but a couple people canceled, and now we have the small room. I'm like, okay, I'll see you at 7:30 on Friday. Like, this is going to be, I could tell, it's going to be a weird one.
Okay, so first off, if he comes in and, like, his zipper is down, you notice a missing testicle. Don't go, oh, my God, what happened? We've learned this from earlier, Scott.
Right.
Don't put yourself in a spot.
You're right.
Because if you do, you're going to be forced to do the whole shirt stain thing, and I don't want you yelling at me when you throw marinara at a cancer survivor, okay? I
will
want to hear it.
I will try my best.
I'll give you the best advice, but I don't want to hear about it. Well, second of all, I think they should go ultra surprise. Like, they should have the place to bring him into. It should be, like, totally dark, where, like, everybody's he's, like, walking in, what's going on, whatever. And you're just quietly saying your jokes in a microphone. They keep bringing them in. Like, refuse to have people yell surprise. Like, keep doing your comedy bit for like 20 minutes as he's there in the dark saying, what the heck is going on? I thought we were going to see a Ram truck in here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I guarantee it's sounding more and more like I'm definitely going to have a story from this one. But let's segue to our guest here. Now, I was going to do a little bit here, but we're coming up on our guest. I guess testicles is a good a good transition. We always try to find some kind of segue into our guest, and I guess that's a pretty good one. And actually, Mike actually hinted at this during the Dee Snider interview, who we had coming on the show.
Yes, I did.
So a couple months ago, weeks ago, I was watching a documentary called The Final Member, and it is all about a phallological museum, a penis museum in Iceland. I know that sounds weird, but and it was weird, but it was a really actually entertaining story. So being the show that we are, we love kind of getting these interesting people. We've had crime museums on, we've had people who've committed murder on this show. We've had missing people who had their sister murdered and trying to solve cases. We've had backwards runners. So we've had like the full gambit of people. We had penis puppeteers. So this, now this museum is not, it's not quite like a, it's not like a really like a sex museum. It's more of like a science anatomy type of museum. And it is in Reykjavik, Iceland. So we have right now the manager of the Icelandic Phallological Museum. His name is Thordur O. Thordarson, which is probably the most Icelandic name ever. Like, I love it. Yeah. But
that name should be in a museum.
Yeah. So without further ado, from the Penis Museum in Iceland, here is Thordur. So first off, I want to thank you for coming on the show, spending a few minutes with Mike and I. That's Mike. I'm Scott. I got to say we've talked to people in Australia and England and I think South Africa, but I think you are our first guest from Iceland. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm honored.
It's a big accomplishment, is what I'm saying. It's huge. Yeah. But so. I reached out to you a couple weeks ago because I was scrolling around on my TV, and I put on the documentary, The Final Member, on mm-hmm. Hulu. And I'd seen the documentary as a couple years old now at this point, but and it all has to deal with the museum that you work at, Philological Museum, which is mm-hmm. a museum based around different animal penises. And eventually, in the documentary, the goal was to obtain a human specimen. How did you – let us start here. How did you get involved in this line of work?
Well, I'm married into it. It's not the kind of job you apply for.
Right. So how did you – what did you marry – it was Siggy, right? The main character, the owner?
Yeah, the main character. He's retired now, and his son took over, and I met the son's daughter, and one thing led to another, and we married, and I started working here.
So, like, what is your first reaction when you're like, okay, well, I'm going to start working at a penis museum? Like, did you have immediate interest in it, or did you initially think it was this is a kind of a strange job title?
Oh, it definitely is, and I don't know. We hadn't known each other meeting for a couple of months before she told me about it. But I had a different career, which was fine. But the in-laws offered me better wages and better hours, and they basically gave me an offer I couldn't refuse. So
what is your day-to-day operations with the museum? Is it tours, upkeep, behind the scenes? What do you do on a regular day?
Well, normally I would be obtaining new specimens and basic management of staff and tours as well, and the press. We get a lot of interest from the press, but also just development of the exhibit. I mean, we are a private museum, and our competition is mostly state run, so we are totally dependent on the goodwill and the happiness of our customers. So I think we really have to work for that. So a lot of it just goes into we have to be in development. So and we're always adding something new and trying to update and trying to take note of the feedback we get from our customers.
Now, for people who didn't see the documentary or are just turning this interview on and going, okay, what the hell are these guys doing this week? Give us a little background to the history of the museum and with Siggy and how this whole thing started. Because you guys have been open for quite a while now. But what were the grassroots of the museum?
Well, the grassroots of the museum was he was a headmaster in a secondary school in a small town in Iceland, which had a booming whaling industry. And he spoke very much of how back in the day people utilized everything from the animals,
right,
which were hunted and which were even from livestock and stuff. But he lamented that this had discontinued. So a lot of his friends who were with him out drinking, they took note of what he said, and they started giving him penises from the whaling station. It wasn't used there, and some of them had summer jobs there. And what kind of began as a joke will develop for him into a passion. And eventually, after 24 years of collecting and the living room getting filled with penises, his wife said, no more. You can't keep the penis at the house anymore. So what do you do when you have a huge collection of penises, a lot of them whales, and you open a museum?
Mike, you're going through a similar struggle, right?
I'm getting an extra storage space and everything right now.
Yeah, we've got some competition there in the States. You're collecting penises.
Well, I mean, once Scott told me what was happening, I'm like, wait a minute, there's nothing in North America.
Yeah.
I don't feel like competition here. You're on the other side. When people do the European vacation, they'll come to you, but I got Mexico and Canada coming here.
It's free enterprise. Yeah. Free enterprise. Mike is seeing a business opportunity.
Yeah. Well, good luck with getting the whale penises.
Yeah, that's going to be tough, man. We got a trip to Alaska in a couple of weeks. We'll figure out something.
Yeah.
But with all seriousness, with this discussion on like obtaining them, like what is the general process in like putting in a request? Are you going to hunters? Are you going to slaughterhouses? How do you specifically say, okay, we have a very specific need to obtain, like, you have like over 300 animals, if I read right?
We have just over 350 penises from over, we're at 111 or 112 species right now.
Wow.
But like, yeah, with regards to the process, a lot of the whales were actually beached whales, especially with the larger ones were beached whales. And like our founder, he went like all over the country. I mean, we're an island, and he contacted like coastal farmers and asked like, if a whale beaches on your beach, can I take its penis? And I mean, they would, sure, why not?
Yeah.
We have kind of lax laws here. I mean, compared to most places, I guess it comes with the territory of being a small country. So we are able to do that kind of without like too much, paperwork compared to most places, I guess.
So like now that the museum's been open, you say you have over 300, and we'll get to kind of the role the documentary played in a minute, but what is like, is there like, okay, these are, like goals for you guys, like these are there specific animals you still don't have yet, or something you're striving for that's kind of like the golden penis, if you will, like you're like almost
the Moby Dick,
yeah.
If you will.
well, with regards to Moby Dick, our biggest penis is a sperm whale penis, an average sized male adult male sperm whale, and Moby Dick was a sperm whale, so Moby Dick is not if you mean like we're Captain Ahab and we're looking for the golden penis, we would like our only human penis at the moment. He was 95 years old, so right. It's the condition a 95 year old human penis would be in. So, I mean, getting another human specimen wouldn't be bad. But a couple of years back, there was a. We've been in contact with a rancher from Namibia who has gotten us a few penises from Africa, which is very fun, and we're very happy with that. But he once had a lion's penis. It was a lion who a stray lion who came into his land, and he had to fell it because it was killing his livestock.
Uh-huh.
And he took its penis and put it in a freezer, but he went had a vacation over the summer, and one of his workers tried to cook it, mistaking it for a piece of filet.
Aww.
So yeah, that elusive lion's penis, but no animal's ever been killed for its penis with us. So yeah.
Now, is there a lot of like, I can't imagine it's as easy as you like contacting me or Mike and being like, oh, you got to ship it on over. Is there like red tape involved and like a whole process to get it into the country and transport things like this?
Oh yeah. It's different between countries. I mean, we're kind of like a well-oiled engine when it comes to getting the permit to get things in here. But you always have to go through the paperwork of the country for the export. And like at the moment, we're trying to get a mule deer from the northwest of the U.S. And there is like just a ton of paperwork we have to do from that just to get like a shipping company like FedEx to ship it, especially with like all the difficulties of like transportation now with the COVID situation.
Right. But
with regards to we got a polar bear from Greenland that took like the paperwork took like a couple of hours there. So.
Mm. So when you get like a new specimen, what's your process and all? Do you like have to set up like a whole new display, or how do you set up things where when people come up to it, is it just simply, hey, this is a lion's penis, or is there like a story behind it or education? What do we get when we get a new specimen?
Well, when we get a new specimen, first of all, it has to be prepared. I mean, we have to get rid of all the blood and, you know, like excess tissue. We groom it, I guess you could say. And then we preservation. It goes into a plexiglass cylinder filled with formaldehyde that should keep it for the most of the time. But then it goes some research into the penis itself, and eventually we get up like a phallological profile on the species and the penis. Like, you know, information like mating habits, average penis length, stuff like that. And also, we also always have a section called oddities, because actually with most species, you have something, there's something different. Like, say, instance, an elephant has enormous motion control over its penis. It could scratch itself with its penis even. Mm. Stuff like that. So it's, you know, basic phallological info and fun facts, basically, as well.
So with the museum, I know that Iceland has a pretty big tourist season. In fact, some of my friends on social media, I think I've seen 4 or 5 of them in the last couple months taking trips over to Iceland. And I know you guys have pretty harsh weather seasons and whatnot. So is there a limited season for the museum? And is most of your visitors from other countries, or is it mostly locals?
We're like any museum. It's mostly like people out of town and foreigners.
Right.
But with regards to the season, I mean, us being an island, I mean, it's called Iceland, but, you know, around the coastal areas, especially like the southwest corner, I mean, we have pretty cool summers. It's not that hot, but we also have mild winters. On the other hand, way up north, you get proper summers, but much harsher winters.
Right.
So I know that... as we talked earlier, how you had a human specimen, that's all part of the documentary. And for what I understand, like just obtaining it, it sounded like it wasn't like stretched out or anything. And I know there's like a deal with Jonah Falcon to obtain his. So what do you need to do? Like, is there something in the will that, like, the mortician has to prepare this, or I'm trying to get the grasp of when this happens, what do you do behind the scenes to get it set up so you don't have the same issue as your first specimen?
Because Mike is also interested in donating, so that's why he's asking his question.
Mike will send you paperwork.
Okay. But nobody said there was paperwork involved when I was going to convey my penis. So this is very upsetting.
Well, it's a small contract you fill out, which is basically, you know, that you want to donate your penis. But then it very much comes to like, how much did you prepare for this? Have you told your relatives? And is there somebody who would be willing to go through with it? And I'm not sure that you could get any mortician to do it. It was actually here. It was a veterinarian, a veterinary surgeon who made the cut on the Icelandic gentleman who donated, Mr. Arason. And it was it happened like that. I wasn't there, but apparently, I mean, he died. He went into like the mortician's office and he made the cut. And but with other donators, I mean, he didn't have any family, and he was very like expressive about like his will, what he wanted to do with it. I'm guessing that future donors would probably be a little bit more, you know, discreet about it. And that would be something that they would have to find someone to, you know, go through with.
Now, for those who haven't seen the documentary, it is about the museum, but then it really seems to focus on the two guys, Mr. Aronson and forgetting the other guy's name, kind of a wacky kind of guy who had a name for his penis and tattooed it and everything else and seemed obsessed with getting it in there. And I had read like a follow-up article that Siggy wasn't 100% happy with the storytelling of the documentary. Why was that? Was the documentary focused too hard on these characters, or what was the reason behind that?
I think he felt that a little bit, but I mean, knowing that the you know, for a documentary they have like a limit on, you know, how long it can be, and I just know that they filmed so much material. And I mean, I get it, like it's set up like a competition and it's kind of almost like a rivalry, and you know, it's good for storytelling, but I know there was like a ton of unused material which he would have very much liked to see in the film. So
yeah, like I was wondering, like, the documentary gets a bunch of attention, and it's, like I said, it's on Hulu right now if anybody wants to check it out. Did you guys see a big influx of visitors after that, and also like people interested in possibly donating their penis to the museum?
Well, you know, our donors, like especially like I mean our human donors have kind of, I guess you could say, skyrocketed, but like with regards to who will follow through with it, I'm doubtful about many of them. And even with the American gentleman who was in the film, we haven't heard much from him since. So I'm guessing he'll go through with it, but I haven't heard from him in a while. So I don't know if he ever actually was serious. I mean, he seemed to be,
right?
But you know, he spoke about, you know, donating whilst alive, which is very different from Mr. Arson did. So, yeah, we don't know.
It looks like Tom Mitchell was the
Tom
person.
Tom Mitchell.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And the name of the penis is Elmo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's obviously a bunch of different standards in, like, where we are in the U.S. versus over in Europe. Like, I feel if somebody tried to do this concept in the U.S., there'd be like a lot of backlash from people who are like, oh, you're sexualizing something or whatever. Did, when this was all started or when you got involved, do you guys ever get like kind of pushback locally or in Europe, or is it just pretty much a different culture and they just understand that it's just a different type of museum?
Kind of, I think a lot of people here would just like, why? But it's Iceland is pretty laid back. I mean, there's nothing like particularly phallic in Icelandic culture. I mean, it's it's, you know, I think in many ways we have similarities with America, especially like I think you know, kind of like an independence kind of, and you know, wanting to, you know, do our own thing. But like, as pretty much people felt that it wasn't bothering anybody, and people went to the museum, see that it's not really a sex museum. It's more like a
science.
Yeah. Even like, I mean, it's just a nature museum. You engage in comparative anatomy rather than, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, and just so you guys know, I think like about 60% of our visitors are Americans, and, you know, we've got excellent reactions from Americans, probably our happiest customers. So.
Now, being surrounded by these things and curating things and being an integral part of the museum, I got to ask you, do you have like is there a favorite penis of yours? Like, is there one that you're like, you got to go see this one when people come and ask, like, what is the one they have to go check out?
The biggest one, the sperm whale, is probably the most popular one, but human one always, you know, when people notice it, he was 95 years old, it gets a great reaction. But I personally feel that the walrus, I mean, it was 20 years ago, like one of the largest walruses ever to beach on the coast of Iceland. We got its penis, and it is it's tremendous. I mean, people don't know how well packed a walrus is, and you know, just the reaction, and just, you know, you don't think about a penis when you think about a walrus,
right?
I mean, definitely not, but yeah, I'd say the walrus.
Now, is Siggy involved in the museum whatsoever anymore, or is he kind of just kind of stepped completely away from that?
Well, kind of, he's retired, but I mean, he always wants to know what's going on with it, and we run by things by him, and when we just relocated last year, and he helped us a lot with, like, you know, just putting the information forth. And but it's mostly that kind of thing. It's not, you know, it's mostly office work, but
right.
like more with like guiding and stuff like that. But he occasionally comes by to heckle visitors. So, yeah.
Like, what exactly does it do? When you're in a room full of penises, you got to do something really to stand out to do that, right?
Well, he would maybe like, you know, walk up to, you know, somebody to who's looking at something and, you know, tell him something like, did you know that male rats can get multiple orgasms, stuff like that, asking questions like that.
I did not know that. That will be today's verbal shenanigans fun fact of the day.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, as we're having fun and joining, you're having great success and all. Is there a good sense, like, when people walk in, like, they're coming in? I'm not sure if it's the right term to say coming in for a laugh, or is it a good feeling when they come in and they're just automatically going, man, I can't wait to see how big this is and that is? Or is it more fun when people come out and like, wow, I really learned something today?
Yeah, I'd say the latter, actually, because you know, it's we strive to be tasteful in our presentation, and you know, it is part of the joke is doing a penis museum just super seriously. You know what I mean?
Right.
It has like a very like the atmosphere is very like scientific, but still we try to make it very comfortable. We have comfortable lighting, and we try to have everything like very modern now. Pretty much, this is after us moving to the new location. We're kind of doing it like we always wanted to do, but I mean, I think a lot of people are surprised like at how, you know, comfortable and actually just I think just how professional it has become. And I mean, people really they walk out with a smile on their face, you know, laughs, and genuinely feel that they've learned something.
Yeah. So, Thordur, I want to thank you for your time from across the pond. It's really cool to talk to you and kind of get some information on the museum and whatnot. Before we let you go, I want you to tell us where people can check out the museum. What's the best place to, you know, get in contact with you guys, or how to book a visit? And two, I wanted to ask, what is I noticed on your website you have honorary members of the museum. What exactly does that entail?
Yeah. I'll take the first one first. Honorary members are basically people who have donated organs, or penises that is, or pieces of art, or assisted the museum maybe with a translation of, in some way, or you know, basically contributed some way to the museum. With the former, our website, phallus.is. It is going to get a major update very soon. It is very dated, and it shows all of the pictures are from the old location. But yeah, phallus.is. And if you want to contact us, it's best to contact us at phallus@phallus.is. We're situated at the moment in the downtown area of Reykjavik, right by the harbor. It's a great location. We have a bar, and we have a bistro as well. And I mean, just come check us out. I think we're definitely one of the main attractions here, well, museum-wise at least, in Reykjavik.
It's awesome.
Thank you guys for contacting us. I mean, we really appreciate the attention, and I mean,
no problem. It's great.
Absolutely.
When I saw this documentary, I'm like, this museum is a 100% perfect fit for our show, because we always try to kind of just find interesting, passionate people in all different walks of life, and you guys certainly fit that mold. Mike, one last question.
Yeah. There has to be some kind of story of like a delivery person or somebody coming in to do like a cleaning job that didn't realize what you are. Do you have any stories of just the eye popping shock of coming inside and realizing what you guys are?
Yeah, well, there was one gentleman, I think it was Italian, who went into the museum like really like wide eyed and very serious. And he came out like, you know, just like in shock, almost shaking, and up to me and said like, I thought that this was a pantheological museum about like the pagan gods and stuff like that. And when I started seeing, like, is there like a major penis worship in Iceland or something? You thought he had totally misunderstood the culture. But yeah, we have a bunch of like stories like that. Probably one would you like to hear that? We get a lot of emails from teenagers sending us. This is not the fun part of the job, but we get a lot of emails from teenagers anonymously sending us pictures of penises,
oh, God,
asking, is this average?
Oh, God. Wow.
Yes, you need to meet the minimum length, and I'm afraid you do not meet it, good sir.
Well, we're not cruel. So.
Thorter, thank you so much for your time. Good luck with the success of the museum, and hopefully me and Mike venture over to Iceland. We'll come say hi.
Well, thank you, guys. I hope we see you, and good luck with your show.
Thanks. All right, Mike Thorter. Order from the Penis Museum.
I feel bad we didn't like properly welcome him on the show by doing like skull, skull, skull.
Oh, yeah.
Skull.
I don't think it'd have the same effect with just the two of us clapping on Zoom, though.
No,
no.
I just thought that was our handshake over there.
Just two of us clapping in the Zoom screen until he says, "Please stop, guys."
Yeah, yeah, we should have done it for like 20 minutes straight, like not even ask him a question. You know? Now, let me ask you, do you think you could be a tour guide in that museum? Or you think you could give people knowledge on these subjects?
I don't think I have knowledge now, if that's what you're asking, but I think if I worked in the museum and learned, I don't think I'd have a problem with it, honestly.
Well, Scott, why don't we find out what you do know?
Oh.
Because I came up with a game, and it's called You Don't Know Dick. I got seven questions here.
Oh,
ironically, all about genitalia. Let's see how much you know, Scotty boy.
All right, all right. Real quick, would you consider donating your penis after you die?
I'm very weird, but like I... Like,
we know.
Even like
we
checking
know.
Off the box for like organ donor, Like, I don't have, like, this whole, oh, I'm going to go to the afterlife and be, like, have holes in me or whatever. But there's still, like, a weird part of me. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to check
are you,
off
the Are you
box.
One of those guys you think, like, people are going to come after you and harvest your organs and chase you? And
Man, that'd be an insanely great horror movie.
Soon as you sign that, they try to cause, like, car accidents in your way and stuff like that.
Can you imagine, like, just a whole thing where, like, a bunch of teenagers joking, like, ha, 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 yeah, I'll donate, and they sign off on the paperwork, and they're, like, in the middle of the woods, and these Icelandic people are just chasing them with sharp objects?
Organ donor would be a cool name for a horror movie. You know?
Oh, my God. Why did we say this on air? We should have been writing it. We should have got the patent for the name. Now people are going to steal our ideas, just like my spicy wine. It's
you know how many
happen.
Great ideas we've had for shows on this? What do we have, like Moon Pirates or something like that? I don't remember.
Yeah.
And then we had
Moon Jail.
Moon Jail.
Moon Jail.
I still like, personally, I still like, my one of my favorites was when I was talking about George Clooney's, what was it, like Eight Friends or something, he gave like $1 million. And if you got like... If you got like 20 people together that knew this guy and you all had to guess what eight people would and you had to get them in the right order and then you would all win that money. I think that's a game show right there.
Yeah, that's like that's what follows the Bachelorette. Mm-hmm. You know, that's that's one where ABC's like, we'll put on at 10 o'clock. Let's see if we can get a little buzz on this.
Right.
And when it hits like a mass singer, we'll bring it on at 8 o'clock.
Then I had that other idea where we were breaking down Patrick Mahomes' contract, and I said, "Would you? You would get the same amount of money as he that we broke out down to per minute what he was getting. You would get every dollar he did, but every minute a midget in a shiny suit had to hand you money and change.
Yeah,
like if you could survive that for the length of his contract, that's a great game show too, right there."
Oh, yeah. People would go insane.
Yeah.
I'd love that.
Yeah, yeah. So, guys, if we see any of this, good luck, because we're never going to go back and actually listen and find our ideas again. So,
yeah. There are million-dollar ideas if you listen to all of our all of our shows and all. Now there's going to be some dumb stuff in there too, but they're $1 million ideas, so you got to go through it.
Yeah, you got to put the, you got to put the work.
Game show. How many episodes can somebody go through before they give up on trying to hear the $1 million idea?
All right, give it to me.
All right, Scott. According to medicalnewstoday.com, from a study trusted source that measured the angle erections of 1,565 men, what was the most common range of degrees? Was it 30 to 60 degrees? Was it 60 to 85? Was it 85 to 95? Or was it 95 to 120?
So right away, I'm getting rid of the super high one because that seems super high. And then the low one doesn't seem erect to me. So I think it's got to be one of these middle ones. I'm going to go with the 60 to 85 degree range.
30.9% of the men are 60 to 85 degrees. God, you're one for one.
Let's go. Yeah, the other one, the other one's like a super boner. Like, that's way, that's like above 90. It's starting to come back towards you.
Well, the weird thing is, you talked about you eliminate the super low and the super high. Those have higher percentages than the 85 to 95.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, if you want to check the math and all, we'll get 1,565 men to come over your house and you can confirm this.
I mean, I almost do because I just want to see you try to confirm with 1,500 men to come to my house and show me their erection.
Yeah, I guess the interview process would be weirder than the actual result.
Yeah, yeah. So. Hi, right. I'm Mike from Verbal Shenanigans. Would you like to share your erection with my friend Scott?
Hey, this is Mike Berlew, big supporter of the Klan. Can you help me out with this penis degree study? Okay.
All right, one for one.
Scott,
here we go.
One for one. Charles Darwin spent 8 years studying what creature's penis? Is it barnacles? Is it hornets? Is it gray wolves? Or is it alligators?
Oh, man. You threw me off because I was thinking Darwin and the birds. I thought there was going to be a bird in there, and I was going to go with that. So can you run those back real quick?
Sure. Barnacles, hornets, gray wolves, alligators.
I'm going to go with gray wolves. I'm going to go with gray wolf penis.
Scott, he spent 8 years studying barnacle penis.
A barnacle has a penis?
Barnacles have the largest penis with proportion to their body. And that's basically because they're stuck to rocks and boats and stuff like that. So they actually need a larger penis.
Did you know this before this, or you did research?
No, okay. I knew about the Darwin thing because it was on Epic Rap Battles of History, him versus Ash Williams. But then I looked into it more to kind of go, because after it was said, I'm like, what? And then I'm like, oh.
All right. The most boring sex in the world has to be barnacle sex, right? Like, that cannot be a good watch.
I mean, it might be romantic. I mean, they're stuck to a boat and all. I mean, they're taking like a cruise. You got time to kind of like chat with your lady before you do it. I mean,
all right. So you think they're just like talkers? Like, it just takes a long time for it to
happen.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. One for two. One for two.
Okay. Scott, what food was originally thought to be a means to prevent people from masturbating? Was it escargot? Was it tapioca pudding? Was it garbanzo beans? Or was it cornflakes?
God. I can't imagine it's escargot. I'm going to go garbanzo beans.
Cornflakes.
Why?
Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, the breakfast cereal mastermind, invented these and other products because he thought the plain foods would lead Americans away from the sin of masturbation.
So he thought his food was so boring that they would just be like, I'm going to go to sleep instead.
Yeah, I guess I figure if you're bored, you're more likely to do it than not do it. Like, if it was like a super exciting breakfast cereal, I'd be like, I'd be all jacked for the day to just like run around and do whatever. I wouldn't be sitting around, you know, doing that there, kind of thing.
There has been many guys who have done it while eating cornflakes. That has definitely happened before.
I'm sure. I'm going the internet. You're bound to get 20 or 30 videos, I'm sure.
Please send them to Mike Berlew at...
All right. One for three, Scott. And, you got
to
catch up.
I know. I got to get to the 500 mark here.
So Gu Li Zhong, that is a restaurant brand that specializes in dishes prepared from the genitals, penises, and testicles.
I saw this article, and I'm still going to get this wrong.
Okay. Of male animals from a wide variety of species. Which penis is the most expensive to eat at that restaurant? Is it Kobe bull? Is it seal? Is it panther? Or is it mountain goat?
I'm torn between seal and mountain goat here. Because I feel like mountain goat, probably pretty hard to catch. Seals, I feel like you can get them pretty easily. Kobe, like... That seems like it would be an answer just because Kobe beef is so expensive. I'm going to go with mountain goat.
Scott, for $500 a plate, you can have a seal penis.
I don't know if seals like wash up all the time. Isn't there like Seal Island where they can just club them all and take their penises?
I mean, I guess it's whole procedure of getting them. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, four, Scotty. Come on now.
Would you try a seal penis?
I don't think I would go into that restaurant. Like, I don't know. Maybe if it was like a guy's thing, like, I dare you to do it, I would do it. But, like, I don't think, like
it's tough.
I'd barely go out and get steak. I can't fathom dropping $500 for a seal penis.
What if Chick-fil-A, sir?
The line would be too long.
Oh, so man.
I wouldn't even bother.
All right, this is my only shot at getting above 500.
All right. Scott, what creatures shred their penis after sex and regrow it? Are they mosquitoes, clams, sea slugs, or termites?
Oh, God. Mosquitoes.
Sea slugs.
I don't even know what a sea slug is. I think it kind of looks like a penis.
They kind of do, and they have their genitalia on their head, and then after they have sex, they kind of fall off, and then a few days later, they regrow them.
Imagine that's what we were like. That'd be kind of weird, like, I don't know, being at a sporting event with people's genitalia just falling off their heads.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd wear hats all the time just to prevent the embarrassment and whatever.
Yeah, a lot of beanies.
Scott, you might not be able to make it over 500, but let's see how you do with the rest of the way.
I'm sad, Mike. I'm sad.
I know, man. According to LiveScience.com, a study found that at some point in our evolutionary history, humans lost a stretch of DNA that would have otherwise promoted which of the following? A, the growth of spines on the penis. B, a penis to be curly like a pig's tail. C, a protective sac that layered over the penis. Or D, an added urethra that would allow urination to come from the bottom of the shaft.
That makes perfect sense. You know, I always wondered, I had an in-depth conversation, why did we never develop, like, you know, you watch MMA or sports or whatever, it's a very vulnerable area. Like, you know, like we have protection for our heads and we have bones that cover our hearts and our lungs and we have things like that. Why did we never develop a shell of some sort that it kind of hides behind over years? Why have we not evolved to that where a shell that can go up and down? But I'm either going between spines or the double urethra. I know, like, I think a lion has spines on their genitalia to hold the mate in place, if I'm not mistaken. Double urethra makes so much sense. But I'll go with spines.
Scott, we would have had spines on our penis.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. They're not really sure evolutionary-wise why it was necessary at the time, but just from looking over DNA, apparently that was in caveman times, spines on the penis.
Hmm. All right. Well, you know, either that or it was just an STD that went around.
Yeah, if you ever watched that Lost episode of the Flintstones, you just hear Wilma screaming, ow!
That's why Bam Bam was so dangerous. Yeah.
The next week, Pebbles was born. All right, final question for you, Scott.
All right.
How long was the surgery to reattach John Wayne Bobbitt's penis?
Hmm.
Was it 7 hours, 9.5 hours, 11 hours, or 12 and a quarter hours?
I think they get that done in 7. I think they get that done in 7.
Need a little extra time, Scott. They need 9.5.
Wow, 9.5 hours. God.
I mean, just think about it. I mean, the first 2 hours are probably just like, well, what the hell are we going to do?
Yeah.
They don't really teach this in medical school.
No, the first 2 hours are you take as many pictures as possible so you make $1 million from the tabloids that you could sell the pictures to.
I mean, I can't imagine them being that interesting. It's just him with his hands down there going, oh.
Ah, man, 2 for 7 is not great. It's not great. That's basically,
Scott, I'm afraid,
basically what the Mets are hitting right now.
Yeah, I'm afraid this show showed us that you don't know dick.
This is where you need like an awesome... Da, 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 da. Tune in next week. Na, 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 na. Ba, 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 ba. Yeah.
Somebody with a deep voice, you don't know dick.
we got a few minutes here. Mike, what's the I've been to a couple interesting museums. What's the have you ever been to anything interesting before?
Trying to think of like anything off the wall. I mean, I've been to the touristy ripped off Ripley's Believe It or Not ones when I was younger.
Right.
I mean, I blame myself. I was a little kid. I'm like, Daddy, this should be cool. And then you go in, you're like, no, it's not. I'm trying to think. I mean, nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, I've been to a few museums in D.C. and Jersey, mm-hmm. been to a few aviation ones, but nothing where it's like, huh, that's odd. Let's go in here.
Yeah, I in New Orleans, there was a serial killer museum, and we were going to go, but it was closed. So I just walked past it and looked in it. I went to the bodies exhibit. That was definitely a very interesting museum. It's basically bodies all around you, like in different ways. And I also went to the, I think you pronounce it, Mütter Museum in Philadelphia. Now, that one is wild. That is, it's basically all like abnormalities in humans. So it's like twins that were attached by the head, the biggest like gallstone ever, like all stuff like that. So that kind of reminded me of the penis museum a little bit. But Mike, I just wanted to review some museums that are actually out there and see which one you would actually maybe like to go to.
Okay.
There's the Cup of Noodles Museum in Ikeda, Japan. In between sampling the best bowls of ramen in Japan, visitors can explore the history of one of Japan's most iconic exports, cup of noodles. The museum includes an Instagram-worthy haul with 800 instant noodle packages from around the world and a station you could decorate and customize a pack of cup of noodles. Do you have any interest, Mike?
I guess some in the sense that like when you get to the food court, since it's in Japan, I'm guessing you're getting some like real ramen noodles, not the stuff that they ship out.
Right.
I mean, maybe like a quick 30 minutes an hour. I guess it would depend on the price. Side note, for pumpkin spice whatever, Cup of Noodles is coming out with a pumpkin spice ramen bowl, which I plan to obtain and review on pumpkin spice whatever.
Can't see that being good, but yeah, could be surprised.
I mean, cinnamon. I mean, if you concentrate on like the cinnamon part, then the sugary, I think it will work.
Yeah. It's just the noodle part. I don't know if I want like cinnamony noodles. I don't know.
Yeah. How would you say cinnamon noodles? Write us in the comments below.
You can also in Japan, the Maguro. I'm gonna mess this word up too, guys. I hope you didn't come here for English language tonight. The
Lord
Maguro.
Knows, I can't help.
Parasitological museum. So. Besides adorable cat cafes and yummy instant ramen museums, Japan also has its fair share of creepy sights. The Maguro Parasitological Museum in Tokyo is best seen on an empty stomach as it houses more than 300 parasite specimens, including the world's longest tapeworm, Mike, at 29 feet. Also has displays of preserved dolphin stomach and turtle's heads that have both been overtaken by parasites. Are you interested?
Oh, 100%. That looks like I'll be going through it. Oh, that's funky. Oh, that's cool. Just,
yeah.
Like, that's something I think I can spend like a couple hours and just like, what the? All right, I'm not swimming there. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This one I would go to, the Museum of Bad Art. there's a saying that one man's trash is another man's treasure, and the Museum of Bad Art outside of Boston is living proof of that. The museum is the only in the world dedicated to displaying terrible art. It's more of 600 pieces were mostly scavenged from dumpsters, curbsides, or thrift stores. Are you in, Mike?
I'm 50-50 on this. It's kind of like getting excited to watch a bad movie. It depends. Is it a bad movie or so bad it's good?
Mm.
And that's kind of like the balancing act I'm doing. Like, if I'm going in there and it's like, yeah, it's bad, it's like, all right, there's no interest in it. If it's like what I would really like is have the artist there trying to defend their art as I'm staring at it.
I was going
to
say
that would be entertaining.
I've been to actual museums where I thought the art was bad, so like it was just like not worth seeing. So yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I like your rationale there, Mike. There's a penis museum, so there might as well be a national poo museum in England. Ooh. The museum, which is in the process of refurbishing its new permanent home, seeks to break down the taboo around poo by talking all about fascinating things you can learn from. Resin spheres and case samples from different animals as well as humans. You could see fossilized feces. You could also see owl pellets and a preserved shoe with cat droppings in it. Doesn't sound too great to me.
Most people who own cats have poo in their shoe. Right. I don't see how that's something to go to the museum about. I think I'm passing on this one just on the fact I can't fathom how interesting a pile of poo could ever be. Like, I guess once in a blue moon when you see like a horse taking a dump, you get a good chuckle about it. But like, am I going to spend 3 hours of exhibits looking at it, it's like, oh, that came out of a rhino. Oh, that came out of a tiger. I mean,
no.
Like, if the animals were actually pooing, maybe, I don't know.
So,
like I said,
so you want to go to a current poo museum where they're just waiting and there's like a little light that's going off. Like, you got to get to the goat exhibit.
Oh, they turned to chili. Run. I mean, you got to admit, like, when you watch a parade and, like, you have a cop on a horse and it takes a dump, that's entertaining. But, like, if you just were, like, walking past the street and you saw cow poo in the middle of the street, you ain't going, wow, that's exciting.
I'm more thrilled with the fact that you're at a parade and you're just waiting for a horse to poo and there's a 40-something-year-old man just like, the horse pooed.
Yeah. No. I'm telling the kids, no, why don't you go grab that candy?
Now, we've talked a lot about death on this show and what we want to do with our bodies and different burial things. So there is a National Museum in Texas of funeral history, Mike. Funeral history. For 25 years, funeral director Robert L. Waltrip dreamed of a museum dedicated to the history of death care and funeral services. In 1992, that became a reality. This surprisingly not macabre museum in Houston has memorabilia such as vintage funeral coaches, funny custom coffins, the Pope Mobile used by John Paul II, and fantasy coffins from Ghana. Are you in, Mike?
I may be interested in that. I mean, I hope it's like full history. The like when you talk about like mummification and some of that stuff. I mean, that was really intriguing there. Yeah, I think it could, it'd be worth a watch, and you know, all as long as it's not too expensive. I think I could go in there for a solid hour and check out some stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So for sake of time, I'm just going to do two more. Mike, the Underwater Museum of Art. The Underwater Museum of Art in Cancun, Mexico. While most people take to the waters around Cancun, Mexico to see marine life, intrepid explorers can snorkel, dive, or take a glass-bottom boat to see a one-of-a-kind museum at the Museo Subacuático de Arte, or Underwater Museum of Art. More than 500 sculptures have been installed on the ocean floor, and coral has grown around them. Are you into this one, Mike?
100%. Yeah. I mean, you're at a vacation site, you're on a boat, you've seen some wild art, you've seen coral down there, can't beat it, your Spanish accent's amazing. It sounds like a perfect holiday vacation.
So here's a couple that I don't think sound great. The Museum of Miniature Books.
Hell no.
Yeah. This one you might be interested in, Mike. The Dog Collar Museum in England.
If the dogs were there in the collar, I'm in.
Yeah. The Barbed Wire Museum in Texas.
What on earth could be big enough there for, like, to fill a hallway?
The Gopher Hole Museum. Gopher Hole Museum. The Muter Museum, which I went to. I told you. The Tabasco Museum, Mike.
Oh, well, that's where I go to pick up my supplies for when they do comedy. So.
I feel like you might be into this. The Spam Museum.
I may give it a shot. I mean, I'll put it this way. Wherever the Spam Museum is probably something that some city that I'm not interested in where the Spam Museum will sound really exciting.
It would suck to, like, try to get, like, them asking you to be on their email list. Like no, I'm not subscribing to spam.com.
Like the other thing to consider is you figure they're trying to sell like season tickets for these places, and like a lot of these it's like one and done. Like any fathom, like no, I gotta go every season. The Pooh Museum has something new. I have to check it out.
Yeah, yeah. And then Mike finally. The Phallological Museum in Reykjavik, Iceland. Mike, would you go to this museum?
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds fun and all. And if anything, it's a good chuckle for an hour or something like that. I'd highly recommend it.
Absolutely. It is time to go, Mike. Let's head on out of here. Anything to promote before we roll?
I mean, not really, but since I'm going to Knoxville, I will say I'm going to this brewery, Schulz Brau Brewing Company. The outside is a castle, which sounds like really, really cool. From what I understand, they brew like really good German beer, and they have German foods there. So I'm going to be checking them out there in Knoxville, Tennessee. I hope it lives to the hype. Schulz Brau Brewing Company.
All right. And I'll promote a fellow podcast. Two comedians I really like, Ken Kranz and
Ritu?
No. Ken Kranz and who am I?
Yeah, we don't like Ritu. Go on.
And Chip Chantry, Jesus Christ. Both of them have a podcast called I Love Rock and Roll. And they had two really, really good episodes lately as far as guests. So we can definitely appreciate a show that hunts for a good guest. So they had. The other day they had Stephen Perkins, who was on our show from Jane's Addiction, and he was just an awesome guest, so I'm sure he was an awesome guest on their episode. And then they also had Richard Marx and Daisy Fuentes on the show at one time. So
I was very jelly of that. Daisy Fuentes was, I think, a 40-pointer on our try to get our insane guests, if you recall. I had a little crush on her during the day.
Well, maybe it's still possible, Mike. Maybe there's still 40 points out there to obtain. But
which is about four times as more points you actually tried to obtain during the Shenanigans Showdown.
Yeah, well, you know, things happen. We'll bring it back one day in some form or another. But other than that, guys, that is it. I want to thank the Phallological Museum for coming on. Really interesting stuff and such a great fit for our show. If you guys dig what you heard today, please subscribe on iTunes and all your podcast listening apps, Spotify, all of them. Check us out on Helium Radio. We're all over the place. And please leave a review or a comment on Podbean. All that stuff really helps us, and it's good to know that you're out there listening. So thank you, Shenanigang and the Rebellions and everyone who makes this podcast special. So that is it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace.
Hey, Scott, my angle of erection is 20 degrees. Should I call a doctor?